Welcome to the RWE conference call. Markus Krebber, CFO of RWE AG, will inform you about the developments in the first quarter of fiscal 2017. I will now hand over to Gunhild Griebe.
Thank you very much, and good morning to everyone on the phone and to those who are joining us via webcast. I'm joined here by Markus Krebber for the presentation on the first three months of fiscal year 2017. This is the first quarterly results presentation after our Capital Market Day, where we will concentrate on RWE standalone. Where appropriate, we show the relevant group figures, which you can also find in the interim statement. In order to focus on your questions, we've kept it short. Let me hand over to Markus.
Thank you, Gunhild, and good morning, ladies and gentlemen. A few exciting weeks are lying behind us. After we presented our new equity story at our Capital Market Day and subsequently discussed our strategy and financial setup in more detail on the road, we were pleased to see that you have started to adopt the RWE standalone view in your models, which will be also our focus in this presentation. Let's turn to the review of the first quarter of 2017. We had a good start to the year. The operational performance of the RWE Group was moderately below the previous year, in line with our expectations. For RWE's operating businesses, the development at European Power and Supply and Trading was quite favorable in the first three months of 2017. Based on the Q1 results, we can confirm the outlook for the year as a whole. In Q1, the fourth U.K. capacity auction took place. After the situation for hard coal plants deteriorated and the British government wanted to avoid shortfalls, they brought the start of the capacity market one year forward to 2017 and 2018. We successfully secured contracts for all our sites with a total capacity of 7.9 gigawatt. However, at 6.95 pounds per kilowatt, the auction cleared at a much lower price than seen in the previous auctions. The first quarter also saw the successful completion of the change of guarantor and creditor for the outstanding RWE AG senior bonds to innogy. This leaves mainly the hybrid capital and the EIB loans at RWE, with the latter still expected to be transferred to innogy by June 2017. As we announced in mid-February, we called the 250 million Swiss franc hybrid bond on its first call date on April 4 and have not refinanced it. I explained at our Capital Market Day that we will still see merits in our hybrid capital, but want to adjust the size of the overall program to reflect the new capital structure. Therefore, we intend to also call the remaining hybrids with a first call date in 2017 and will not replace them. This includes another 150 million Swiss franc in July and $1 billion in October. As you might remember, these hybrids are backed by intercompany loans with innogy, so there is no impact on our liquidity. Despite taking away the full equity credit for all our remaining hybrids, Standard & Poor's confirmed our BBB- rating and stable outlook. With this, they acknowledged the improved financial situation after the IPO of innogy. At the beginning of April, Fitch followed with its rating opinion on RWE standalone. They confirmed their BBB flat rating and upgraded the outlook from negative to stable. Let's then move on to the operational performance. Slide four shows the development of adjusted EBITDA. For RWE standalone, it amounted to 514 million euros, fully in line with our expectations. This result does not yet include any contribution from our innogy participation. The 683 million euros in dividend will be fully recognized in Q2 2017. Slide five provides the details of the performance of the Lignite and Nuclear division in Q1 and the outlook for this division for the full year. Adjusted EBITDA has come down significantly, mainly due to declining realized generation margins and lower volumes from our nuclear power plants. This could only partly be offset by improvements in our operational cost base. This is also the main reason for the outlook for fiscal year 2017 of significantly below previous year, despite the absence of non-recurring items. However, the margin decline is disproportionately high in the Q1 figures compared to the full year. The European Power division had a good start to the year. Tight situations like Dunkelflaute, so no wind and no sun in Germany in Q1, led to a very good result from commercial asset optimization. This overcompensated for the decline in realized margins. Together with cost improvements, this led to an increase in adjusted EBITDA to 167 million euros. Non-recurring items in this division were mainly relating to land sales in the UK. It is still early in the year and we cannot expect the positive trend in commercial asset optimization to recur in the following quarters. Hence, at this point in time, we maintain our outlook for the full year to be significant down year on year. But we are a bit more optimistic than we have been in March. This brings me to the current hedge position on slide 7. Compared to our situation at the end of last year, we have reduced the implicit fuel hedge for 2018 and increased the fully hedged position. The hedged spread position in European power has also gone up to 60%. In 2019 and 2020, we have increased the implicit fuel hedge positions. Our hedge price for 2019 has improved by approximately 1 euro per megawatt hour since the end of last year, in line with the improvement of the fuel spreads in Q1. As the bulk of our 2019 outright volumes is hedged via our implicit fuel hedges, there is additional upside potential from further improvements of the spreads. On the European power side, we are still mostly unhedged for 19 and 20. Now on to the performance of supply and trading on slide 8. Although the division had a good start to fiscal year 2017, at EBITDA of 146 million euro, was slightly below the very strong Q1 2016. Furthermore, last year we benefited from the sale of Lynmouth Power Plant in Q1. The non-recurring items in 2016 referred to the legacy gas book, including the long-term gas storage contract, which we adjusted to market prices in Q2 2016. Looking at 2017, confirmed by the good results in the first quarter, we are optimistic we will return back to normalized earnings, which we see on average in the order of 200 million euros per annum. Ladies and gentlemen, having explained the operational performance, slide 9 provides the other earnings drivers down to adjusted net income. Besides the usual reversal of the non-operating result adjustment in Q1, refer also to the financial result. Here we have adjusted for the effects from the change in discount rates for nuclear and other long-term provisions. Taxes and minorities were adjusted accordingly. You can find the details in the backup of the document. Now on to distributable cash flow on slide 10. The reconciliation from EBITDA to distributable cash flow is dominated by the seasonal development of the operating working capital in Q1. This is mainly due to normal timing effects since we purchase most of our required CO2 certificates in the first quarter of the year. This will revert in Q1 once the certificates for emissions in 2016 are delivered to the national clearing authorities. As we mentioned at our Capital Market Day, we would assume changes in net working capital to be neutral over time. Change in provision and other non-cash items show positive 128 million euros compared to our outlook of approximately minus 650 million euros for the year as a whole. Again, recognition of CO2 emission is the reason. In Q1 2017, we have approximately 0.2 billion euros of additions to CO2 provisions. Provisions will come down in Q2 with the delivery of emission certificates to the national clearing authorities. In addition, we have seen a very low utilization of our nuclear provisions in Q1. Distributable cash flow in Q1 2017 does not yet include the dividend of Innogy. In April 2017, we received 683 million euros for fiscal year 2016. The details of net debt are shown on slide 11. At the end of March, it stood at 7 billion euros for RWE standalone, nearly unchanged compared to the end of fiscal year 16. There are offsetting effects from the negative distributable cash flow and other changes in net financial debt on the one hand and the change in provisions on the other hand. The main driver for other changes in net financial debt are variation margins. As you know, these effects are temporary. The positive effect in the change of provisions is mainly due to the favorable development of our pension assets and slightly higher discount rate for pension and nuclear provisions. On slide 12, you can see the details of our outlook for RWE standalone for 2017. As I mentioned at the start, we can confirm the outlook for the key performance items, including the confirmation of the trend we provided at the Capital Market Day presentation. This concludes my remarks, and we are now happy to take your questions.
We will now
Sorry, although everybody knows it quite well, just let me remind you of our two question rules. Operator, please, you can start.
Yes, if you have a question for our speakers, please dial 01 on your telephone keypad now to enter the queue. If you find your question is answered before it is your turn to speak, you can dial 02 to cancel your question. And if you're using speaker equipment today, please lift the handset before making your selection. The first question is from Vincent Gilles of Credit Suisse. Please
yes,
go ahead.
Yes, thank you. Good morning, everyone. Two questions, please. The first one is very simply the swing in working capital in the first quarter of the year. You explained very well what this is. Should we assume that it's going to be zero basically at the end of the year, because Q4 will also have the same issue as Q1, I guess, timing difference between supplying and receiving payment? And the second question is, you fairly cryptically highlighted potential upside on power prices, and we see that you've been hedging a bit more in the first quarter. So my question is, what do you hear from your traders? What do you hear from your specialists? What is your feeling as the CFO regarding the direction of power prices over the next 2 to 3 years? Should we be a bit more optimistic, much more optimistic? What would you say to that? Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for your question. I mean, on working capital, we said we assume on average it's going to be hovering around zero, the change in working capital. Whether that's true for every single year, that of course depends on valuation effects at year end. The effect in Q4 is usually the valuation of gas in store, because we now start filling the gas storages and we carry most of that on our balance sheet. But on average, we should expect something around the zero. And the effect of CO2 certificates in Q1 was around the 650 million euros, which would bring it to a zero then. Coming then to your second question, I mean, I will not talk my traders' books and I will not tell you insights in what we...
That wasn't my question.
What kind of positions we have in, but as a CFO, looking at our hedge positions, yeah, you can maybe see what we think about a fair valuation of the market. I mean, you know that absolute power prices are depending on global fuel prices, and we risk manage that position quite early by transferring that into the implicit fuel hedge. What you can see now that in 18 we have transferred most of the implicit fuel hedge into an outright position, and with the recent recovery we have seen, which came in much quicker than in the previous years, I think the average price setting fuel spread is close to what we expect when it comes to delivery. In 19 and 20 whatsoever, we still run a very large open spread positions. Spreads have recovered in Q1, but we think there is more to come.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The next question is from Alberto Gandolfi of Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Yes, hi, good morning. It's Alberto Gandolfi in Goldman Sachs. I wanted to ask you, when I look at RWE standalone, if I look at the EBITDA achieved in Q1 and I add back the dividend from Energy, you effectively have achieved something like 70% of your mid-range EBITDA for the year. So could you say that you expect to be mid or upper part of the range, or is it too soon? And then maybe can you elaborate, if you don't want to commit to narrowing the range, what type of benefits from generation did you get in Q1 from weather? I mean, I understand how. I was wondering if there's any million euro amount you can provide. The second question is very simple. Holding costs, or what we call other, I think last year for the full year it was in the neighborhood of minus 150 million for RWE standalone. Now RWE standalone Q1, I only saw minus 12 million euros, and I was wondering if there is a seasonality, if last year was not a good starting point, or if you can give us a bit of a guidance for the year. Thank you so much.
Yeah, Alberto, good morning. Starting with the second question, the holding cost, we don't expect that's going to be up to 150 million euros, but the 12 million euros was artificially low. There is no seasonal impact, but that is not something you can extrapolate. Somewhere in the middle of that, yeah, the minus 150 at 4 times the 12. On On the second question, the seasonality, yes, you are right. I mean, we are already close to 70% of our guidance. It is for us too early to narrow the range. So please let me not speculate on whether we end up at the upper range or not. Give us another quarter, and that also refers to your second question. What did we make in addition to what we have seen in Q1 2016 or maybe also had in the plan? Our own assumptions on commercial asset optimization, that was around 50 million euros on top of what we have seen in 16, yeah, from the situation, from the tight capacity situation on the continent.
Thank you. Did you say 1-5 or 5-0, just to be precise? Sorry.
5-0.
Lovely. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question, please.
The next question is from Deepa Venkateswaran of Bernstein. Please go ahead.
Thank you. I have two questions. The first one is on hedging. You mentioned that for 2018 you've reduced the implicit hedge. I think it was around 40% at the end of December 2016 and now it's 20. And you said that you've closed that out because you've seen already an improvement. But when I look at your chart, your average realized price for 18 is 27 and it was 27 now. So I don't quite see that change coming through. So am I missing something? And could you also highlight any risks from changing your implicit fuel ratio higher or lower? My second question is on there's a comment you make in the quarterly report about you know, the change in regulations about airborne pollutants, and I think what you've said is that it's too early for you to say, but there is a possibility that you might have to do significant retrofitting or shut down early. Could you just talk a little bit about what are the risks involved and what time frame are we looking about in terms of Germany deciding what domestic norms it wants, etc.? Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for the question. Let me start with the second one. I mean, to give you the exact amount of potentially necessary investment into the fleet, that's too early because we first need the translation of the EU new emission targets into national law, because you know that there is a range. So it will depend on how they translate that into domestic targets or requirements. These will come into effect 2021, so still lots of time to go. We expect that the German government will pick the topic up now, and it might take another 6 to 9 months until we know how the detailed regulation will look like domestically in Germany. On hedging, I mean, we only provide the rounded figures. So it was slightly below the 27. It is now slightly above the 27. There was an improvement, but it was too tiny to switch it from a full euro. Yeah. So you are not missing anything. We have improved, or the average head price has increased, but for rounding reasons, it is stable at 27.
Does that answer your questions?
Thank you. Just maybe a follow-up on the emissions. Just want to know, can Germany leave the law and norms as they are if they wanted to, or would they need to at least take the lower end of whatever the EU has said?
No, they have to. I mean, according to European law, they have to take at least the upper end of the emission targets. But what is in addition possible, they can go for an interim period. They can release some specific plans based on a case-by-case exemption. Yeah.
Okay.
Next question, please.
The next question is from Ahmed Farman of Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, thank you. Two questions from my side. Just first on the European power result for Q1, we talk about the positive commercial asset optimization contribution. Can you maybe sort of elaborate a bit on what are the underlying market conditions that have led to this? Is it lower wind and solar output that has sort of helped you in this result? And then second question, I think I picked up during sort of from the statement of the press call that, Marcus, you mentioned that you're very convinced that capacity mechanism will be back on the political agenda after the general elections. I mean, whenever this has been looked in the past, policymakers have not gone through with this. So I just was wondering, has there anything changed, or or where is this sort of your conviction behind this is coming from? Thank you very much.
Thanks for the question. I mean, they are related. Let me start with the second question. I mean, what we have seen in Q1, especially in the second half of January, is a situation where all conventional power generation was needed and was online and producing because of a not untypical situation where we have very low wind production and very low solar production. And that is, of course, also very well known to the regulators and standard setters now. And as you know, another nuclear capacity will go out end of this year, so it will not get better in the coming years. And the full phase-out of the nuclears will happen by 2022, so it is within the next term of the next government that they have to face this problem. So in our expectation that they tackle it rather sooner than later within the next term. So how did we profit from that? Two elements. First of all, when capacity is scarce, the prices for flexibility in the reserve markets are much higher. So we also position our plans in the reserve markets, and we achieved much higher returns here. And then, given the price spikes we have seen, almost all capacity was in the money. So from the high spot prices, we also had optimization results, because we had more capacity producing than originally anticipated when we do our hedging decisions.
Okay, thank you, very clear.
Thank you. Next question, please.
The next question is from Michel Debs of Citigroup. Please go ahead.
Good morning. I have two questions, please. The first one is a long-term question about the German market. I have read in the press, and please confirm if this is correct or not, that RWE believes that by 2050, German internal demand could be around 800 terawatt-hours, assuming that you have an electrification of the heating market to create additional demand. So I just wanted to understand from your perspective if, firstly, this is correct, you genuinely believe that the heating market would be electrified, and secondly, in order for that to happen, you need policy changes. If you could just update us on where the policy changes are regarding the switch from fossil fuel to electricity on your heating market. My second question has to do with your full year numbers. I'm looking at your expectation for group net income, 1 billion to 1.3 billion. And against that, we know that energy should contribute in its own reporting 1.2 billion. I do not want to do a simple subtraction because I understand that there is some form of consolidation adjustment between the two numbers. So could you help us translate that full year, full group net income target into an RWE standalone net income target and tell us what the adjustments are with energy? Thank you very much.
Thank you for the question. The second one is quite easy. The energy target is a 100% energy target. Our target includes only our part of energy, so only the net income attributable to RWE shareholders. So you have to exclude the 23.2%. We also have given guidance on our own adjusted net income. I think it's also now again in this presentation on the last slide of the main part of the presentation. And if you deduct from that the energy dividend of 683 million, you can see what is the operational contribution of RWE to that adjusted net income target. Is that clear?
That is. Thank you.
Okay. And then to the German market. I think it was referring to an interview by Rolf Martin Schmidt, the CEO. This was not an RWE assumption. He was citing a study by a German research institute, a very well-known, respectable one, Fraunhofer Institute. And they were coming up with the with one scenario where power demand could go up to the number you mentioned here in the call. The logic behind it is if Germany also wants to reach the emission reduction target in the transportation and heating sector, the only way to do that is via electrification. And currently there is a discussion in Germany ongoing that the entire burden is currently on the electricity demand. So with all the EEG levies and so on, And especially in heating based on gas and oil, but also on transport, there is not such a levy. So there is a discussion whether the EEG and all the subsidization on renewables should be split among all sectors and not only on the energy sector. And I think that was what the interview was about.
Thank you very much. Just one quick follow-up on the second point. In terms of policy or what the candidates to the election in Germany are saying, is there anything concrete or is this still at the debate stage where experts are discussing?
Now, maybe a personal comment. I don't expect that energy policy but also environmental policy will be among the top 3 to 5 agenda items for the federal election. I think we have currently other topics. So they are all currently writing their programs, but it's more a much more expert discussion now and not a very emotionally heated discussion in the public, which I think is also very helpful to, in the end, find the right solution.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next question.
The next question is from John Musk of RBC. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning, everyone. First question would be on the provisions and the movement of the benefit that you saw. I think it was about 350 million. Can you just remind us of the sensitivity of your provisions to movements in interest rates, both on the pensions and the remaining nuclear provisions? And then also, what is the best relevant benchmark for us to look at to try and track that going forward? And then secondly, quite a simple one, it might not be a very long answer, but is there any update on the nuclear fuel tax position?
Thank you, John. Last one is very easy. No, there is no update. We are still waiting for the ruling of the Constitutional Court, but we don't have any insights when that will happen. So expectation is still this year, could be any time. On the provisions, so it works like that. In those quarters where we don't submit the CO2 certificate, so in quarter 1, 3 and 4, you see that we have a burden in EBITDA for CO2 emissions, for provisioning them. So there you see the reversal in the bridge item, which we call delta in provisions and non-cash items. In Q2, when we hand them into the regulator, you see working capital dropping by the 650-700 million, but also the utilization of provisions for this item jumping to the 650 million. Over the course of the year, the utilization of provisions for CO2 certificates is more or less zero, because production volume is stable and we have that on a yearly basis more or less unchanged. On the sensitivity side, 10 basis points in nuclear provisions is around 50 million euros. And on the pension side, the gross effect, so 10 basis points is equivalent to 200 million for the liability side alone. But usually, given our asset investment here, we also see movements on the asset side. The numbers I have provided are for RWE standalone, so the 200 million on the pension liability side when we see a 10 basis point movement.
Is that okay?
Yeah, so I guess in Q1 you're looking at somewhere between 10 and 20 basis points movement in the mark-to-market that you've done.
Yeah, more to the 10 than to the 20.
Okay, great. Thank you.
But we had a very good result on the pension asset management side. Yeah.
Thank you. Next question, please.
The next question is from Lueder Schumacher of SocGen. Please go ahead.
Good morning, or rather good afternoon. Two questions from me. The first one is on EU state aid approval. You have to transfer a rather big amount of money by the 1st of July. Now, before this can take place, you need EU state aid approval. The law has to come into force, and the contracts need to be signed. So is there any update on when we can expect the starting one of these events, EU state aid approval? I would have thought that given the importance and how near we are to the time of actually making these payments, you should be in quite frequent discussions with Brussels. And the second one is simply on the European Power Division. You mentioned that the income from asset optimization has been rather large in Q1. Could you quantify this, how much it was in Q1 this year compared to last year?
Yeah, thanks, Lueder, for the question. We will not give you a detailed breakdown of the profit contribution, but the number I can provide it was 50 million more than in the respective quarter in last year. The EU state approval, I mean, we are not in constant contact with Brussels on this topic because it's a topic of the German government. So the Ministry of Economic Affairs is on top of the case. I mean, we are in contact with them. They're in regular contact with Brussels, and they confirmed that they expect state approval to come in due course. And the contracts are all finalized, so they will be signed immediately after state approval has been granted.
That okay, Luna?
On the first one, yes. On the second one, I would have thought in due course. This can't be a very satisfactory answer, right? Bearing in mind the importance and the rather huge nature of the cash flows?
I think everybody is aware in Brussels and Berlin, and they are working on getting the act together. There is little influence we have on the topic, right?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Next question, please.
The next question is from Mark Lewis of Barclays. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning. Two questions also from me. Firstly, we're sort of entering a period now where we might get some meaningful reform of the EU ETS with the proposal that was put forward by the Commission and now both the Parliament and the European Council suggesting a more radical reform. Are you able or willing to share with us your sensitivity, the sensitivity of your portfolio to higher carbon prices? I don't know, a €1 or a €5 increase in the carbon price, what does that do to your operating profit on the generation side? And would you also, given that we're coming from a period where CO2 prices have been very flat for the last 3 or 4 years, would it change anything in your hedging strategy if, it's probably still a premature question at this stage, but if within 12 months' time you started seeing CO2 prices moving up as a result of that reform, would that potentially change anything in your hedging strategy? And the second question just relates to German politics again. We had the result yesterday in Nordrhein-Westfalen, people's expectations about the next government and potential coalitions are maybe starting to change. Do you think there is any difference between outcomes in terms of implementation of the climate action plan between the current configuration of a grand coalition between the CDU and the SPD on the one hand, or potentially a CDU-FDP Green Party coalition, or do you think actually it doesn't really matter that policy will be implemented indifferently on that score?
Yeah, thanks, Mark, for the questions. Please accept that I will not start political speculation. So let's wait until we see the federal election and then what their program looks like, and then we can give you our assessment on the content side. But now speculating what potential different coalition would do is not something I'd like to enter into. On the CO2 side, our CO2 position until the 2020 is financially neutral, so we have already hedged our position. And we will take the decision what we're going to take with the next period from 2021 onwards when we have all the details available. So any short-term price movements would potentially not change our hedging policy because we are financially already hedged on the CO2 side.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question, please.
The next question is from Jose Lopez of Millennium. Please go ahead.
Hello, good morning. I have a question on biomass. Could you give us an update on what your latest thinking is in respect of this technology? I think I noted that the Georgia biomass pelleting plant was spun off to Innogy. You've retained the generation. How do you see your footprint in this area? Do you think this is something you might seek to exit, or will you be looking to grow a bit more in this technology? Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. As you rightly pointed out, the production plant is with Innogy, Georgia Biomass. What we do is, I mean, of course, we are involved in biomass trading and also securing the supply for our own biomass demand. And we were granted subsidies from the Dutch government to co-fire biomass in our Netherlands coal-fired power station. And there, when it is backed by a payment by the government, we will, of course, invest into this business because it improves the profitability of the plant and also diversifies the fuel mix. But we have currently no plans to invest further into this field, other than we get another backup payment or capacity subsidy payment by governments who want that. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question, please.
The next question is from Deepa Venkateswaran of Bernstein. Please go ahead.
Thank you. I have two follow-up questions. One is, could you provide an outlook for where you expect your standalone net debt position by the year end, considering a few positives like the energy cash flow and the pension payment, but also loss of hybrid credit, as you basically don't replace the hybrids. Second question really is a follow-up to the previous one on carbon. So you mentioned that you're financially neutral to a rising carbon price environment. Can you just explain how much CO2 allowances you actually have in your books and what price are they reflected in? And, you know, should you need to mark to market, where will we see that in the EBITDA at some point? Thank you.
Yes, Deepa, thanks for the question. Net debt. We expect net debt. I mean, you have seen the number. Last year it was 6.9. Now it is around 7 billion RWE standalone. We're going to lose around 700 million in hybrid credit, but we still expect to slightly overcompensate that and will end with net debt below the 7 billion we have seen end of last quarter. Yeah. On the CO2 side, these CO2 certificates are not marked to market. You're going to see the effect in the EBITDA when we actually produce the power. So it is part of the generation margin because it's a hedge position and not a speculative position.
Just to clarify, so it's now held at cost. So as you actually produce the power in the next 3 years, that basically enters your cost of goods. But if it's held at cost, and presumably if it's been bought because you moved to the strategy of hedging long time back, would that not mean that there's a negative implication on the EBITDA, or am I missing something?
No, I mean, the question is then, at what price levels have we actually bought the CO2 certificates, and could we have bought them cheaper? That is an opportunity loss, yeah? But we have the CO2 position already flexible, already hedged. So it will, as you said, enter the cost of goods when we actually produce. But where you see, but this is a temporary effect, where you see effects is in the margining, yeah? So variation margins, because there we do then mark to market, but
okay.
Not in the P&L.
Okay.
Thank you, Deepa. Next question, please.
The next question is from Nick Ashworth of Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, everybody. A question about the dividend. I mean, I guess by your own admission, you say that Q1 has been a good start to the year. European power EBITDA is a little bit ahead of I think, expectation. The sales and trading has started well. I know it's very early in the year, but it feels like... cash flow EBITDA can come towards the top end of expectations for the full year. In a scenario where it does that mean anything for your dividend? Would you still be committing to pay a 50-cent dividend even if you did much, much better than you're expecting at the beginning of the year? Presumably, the dividend policy has been set around a much lower EBITDA cash flow framework to be able to be paid even if you were at the bottom end of your guidance. If you're at the top end of the guidance range, what does that mean for the dividend? And if it means that the dividend doesn't move, what does that mean for the cash flow that you're generating? It doesn't feel like you need to lower net debt from here. Would there be a reason to keep the additional cash flow?
Thanks, Nick. I mean, as we said, we had a positive start and we are all happy about that. On the dividend side, I mean, that's much too early now to speculate. We said we're going to set the dividend policy also looking not only at the current year but also to the midterm future. And as you know, that still we have not reached the level of realized power prices
we have at current market price, so we're going to see that in 2018. So for the dividend decision also for 17 and 18, we want to have a much clearer picture on also how the budget and the planning looks like for 2018, because we said we want a stable dividend policy and we don't want to see a reduction in dividends for 18. So we're going to smooth that out over the midterm period. So it's now too early after a very good first quarter to start the speculation. We might update that when we have done our plan for the next year, maybe in the fourth quarter of this year.
And planning therefore takes place in sort of late Q3.
Yes, I mean usually the planning cycle is finalized in November, October, November.
Okay, perfect. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Nick. Are there more questions?
At the moment, there are no further questions. As a reminder, please press 01. There are no more questions.
Okay, then I would say we close the call for today. As you all know, the IR department is available for further follow-ups, and we hope to see you soon on the road. Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your attendance. This call has been concluded. You may disconnect now.